There's a saying, if you live each day as if it were your last, someday you will be right. Well, without belief in God, that's probably the one truism that everyone can agree on. We're all going to die. Steve Jobs, who some of you may know, who is famous for his creative design, who has been an icon in many ways in designing, the latest technological revolution, really, in Macintosh and all these other things, a brand name that he has held to. Back in 2004, something happened to him that changed the concept of death into something very personal. He learned back in 2004 that he had been diagnosed with a rare but very aggressive form of cancer. For him, from that time on, death became very real. And he said that he would wake up every morning, he would look in the mirror, and he would ask himself this question: if what I'm to do today, if today was my last day, would I want to do what I'm about to do today? And he said if he asked that question and the answer was no, and he asked it day in, day out for a number of days, however long that be, and there were too many no's in a row, he felt he had to do something about it. He was living in the light of his death for now, for him, for what he could make of life in the present, to achieve for what he valued and what he thought was important. Now, what is this to do with us? The Lord's people can be those who live in the same way. You see, in the book of Haggai, there was a time, maybe not of literal death for many people, but there was a time of economic death, a time where life was hard-pressed, a time when the economy was not going well, a time when life was a struggle. They were facing hostility. Their presence, as they where they had settled, was not in harmony with the surrounding nations. People, a lot of people were not happy with them. They may have felt fear for their futures. So how were they to live? Were they to live for the moment, for themselves? In the book of Haggai, it says, well, that was what they were tempted to do, and in fact did pursue that for a time, because they may not have designed or seen their life as designing something technologically amazing. Of course, they lived many years ago. But nevertheless, the heart was there to try and get everything they could out of life because they felt that they only had so many years to live. So make it worthwhile. But worthwhile for who? Now, that may sound an incredible statement. This is the people of God, but follow me for a time and we'll see how this develops. You see, they were tempted to, rather than look up, to look across, to look at their lives as a ticking clock that was gradually winding down. And they faced two choices: either go with God, be with him and follow him, or turn away from God and go as they thought was wise in their own eyes. Make life worthwhile for them and for their goals and ambitions. Turn away from God or be with God. Two choices. We're going to look at three things this evening. I've called the title, Set Your Heart on God. And we're going to look at three things. The first thing is setting your heart on this world ends in disaster. Setting your heart on this world ends in disaster. We'll keep that heading there, but just to let you know, as we follow through from that, we'll also ask the question, what does that disaster look like? And where should we set our hearts? And the conclusion to that, I'll leave you hanging. All right? Setting your heart on this world ends in disaster. Verses 5 and 7, we have the phrase, consider your ways. Consider your ways, in verse 5, and in verse 7, consider your ways, repeated twice. God is getting our attention. When God repeats something, he isn't doing it because he's lost for words. He's getting our attention. And what does he mean by this? He's addressing the Lord's people. He's addressing you and I. In fact, when he says, consider your ways, he's addressing everybody. What does it mean? Consider your ways. Literally, it means set your heart on your ways. Set your heart on your ways. Ways can be translated, set your heart on your pathway, set your heart on your road. What is a road? A road, if I were to leave these doors, I won't at the moment, but if I were to leave these doors and head out across the road and follow downward, I'd end up in the middle of the town or thereabouts. The purpose of a road is to get me from one place to another. The question when God says, set your heart on your road, is to ask, where are you heading? We're going to look at three A's this evening to start with, to answer that question, where are you heading? Must be a good sermon if it's got three A's in it. The first one is attitude. Three signs, three signposts along the road that are going to answer the question tonight, where are you heading? Attitude, verses 2 to 4, okay, read this. Thus says the Lord of hosts, these people say, the time has not yet come to rebuild the house of the Lord. Then the word of the Lord came by the hand of Haggai the prophet. Is it a time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while this house lies in ruins? Set your heart on your road. What is our attitude speaking of? To answer that, we need to find out how Haggai got to this place. The nation of Israel is a story of triumph and heartache. The people became a great nation, a nation that was for God, who were the people called out to be God's representatives of his presence among them. But sadly, not all went well. The nation was conquered because of their disobedience. They became a divided nation. They fought amongst themselves, and God was grieved with them because they turned away from what they were called to be to a people looking after their own interests. And the consequence of all of that was that they ended up being overrun by an evil nation, in fact, several nations, one of which we were looking at in the book of Habakkuk. They were led eventually into captivity, taken away from their homeland, from all that was familiar with them, into exile. And then 70 years passed before there was a change of heart in the king. The heart of the king is in God's hands, not in his own decision making. God had a plan. This was something that God had had set in his work to show us and to teach us about himself. This nation, Israel, returned after 70 years, or some of them did rather, not all did. The word here described in this chapter is that a remnant came back. A remnant of people came back to their homeland. And one of the greatest marks of all of this mess that had happened in their history, the greatest mark was that the temple was in ruins. There was no greater travesty. There was no greater token and symbol of what had been lost than the destruction of the temple. That is why the book of Haggai focuses so much upon the temple and all that it stood for. It was highly symbolic. It spoke of the presence of God, of God being with his people. They came back to the land and got to work No doubt the fields, some of them had been left. They had to weed, they had to rebuild their houses, they had to clear away the neglect of all those years. There was hard work ahead of them. 16 years passed, but still they concluded that the time was not yet right to focus and to put their energy into building the temple. We read in Ecclesiastes, there's a time for everything. Well, sadly, in their eyes, there wasn't time to prioritize to what was important. What they did find important is found in verse 4. God says, "Is it a time for yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while this house lies in ruins?" The expression there, paneled, describes something ornate, something more than just functional, a necessary shelter. This is something that people had poured a lot of energy into. What you and I build, what you and I put our energy into, says a lot about what we think is important. That is why God says, set your heart on your road. Is it my house? Or is it God's house? Is it for my glory that I live? Or is it for His glory? The road. Now, the road from here to Llanfairpwllgwyngyllgogerychwyrndrobwy, I have discovered, is an interesting road. It involves a lot of twists and bends, ups and downs. I don't know if you've ever been on it. If you have, you'll know you have. It's more like riding a roller coaster. The road to Llanidloes is relatively smooth and easy in comparison. Both roads lead somewhere. How they lead there is not so important. But where are you heading? Where is your road taking you? For some of you, you may think you see the way ahead. It may feel like you can see what is coming, at least for a while. For others of us, we don't even know what's round the next bend. Life is somewhat of a turmoil. But the question is, where have you set your heart? Where are you going? Where are you heading? The first signpost then was what was our attitude. Are we to live for God? Are we to put Him first? Are we heading for Him? Or are we following ourselves? Is that our destination? The second is appetite. Appetite. Here we have, imagine a baby. A baby. Babies have been on my mind quite a lot. A baby cries because it's hungry, and it'll carry on crying and screaming into the night until that hunger is fed, until the baby is satisfied. Well, the writer to Ecclesiastes gives this statement. He says, "All the toil of man is for his mouth, yet his appetite is not satisfied." That describes very well what is going on here for these people. These are people who labored, who worked, but were getting little for it. In verse 6, you see a harsh reality. "You have sown much and harvested little. You eat, but you never have enough. You drink, but you never have your fill. You clothe yourself, but no one is warm. And he who earns wages does so to put them into a bag with holes." It's not going very well, is it? Life is not going very well for them. And maybe some of you feel the same way this evening. You're working hard, but what's come of it? Life's circumstances reveal a lot about what our appetites really are. We may want more, but can't get it. We may fear what we have being lost, and that will drive our energy. It will pull our focus and our goals if we're finding security in what we possess, or in what we can make sense of, or in what other people feel of us, then we're going to pour all our energies into that. That's where our appetite is. What is your appetite? What, when life isn't going well, where does your appetite take you? Does it take you to try and fix those things, to try and hold on to those things, or does it take you to God? Your appetite reveals a lot about where you are heading. Where are you going? Your attitude, is God first? Does he come a close second? Or is he irrelevant? Your appetite, when life isn't going well, what are you hungering for? What does it reveal about your goals and your ambitions? And then lastly, on this point one, we're going to look at authenticity. In verse 9, we have a question that God asks. It's the question, why? Why is a question for the wise. It's a word of the wise. Why are these things going on in my life? Why are these things happening in the world? What is going on in the church? Why? We all ask it at one time or another. Some of us ask it almost every moment of the day at times. But why? God answers that. He says that the situation for you is hard. You go out looking, you go out working, but you get nothing from it. When you come home, but I blow it away. It comes to nothing. Why? Why, declares the Lord of hosts? Because my house it lies in ruins, while each of you busies himself with his own house. What's he getting at there? While each of you busies himself with his own house. That term, busies, literally means running. You would say that my house lies in ruins while each of you runs to his own house. Where do you run most naturally for shelter? You see, a house has a purpose, doesn't it? A house is built to provide protection, to provide a degree of comfort, security, warmth from the elements, from the weather, from its harshness. A house has a purpose. The temple, God's house, represents all that that means in its fullness. You see, for God, the temple was a way in which the people would know whom and how they would get protection, how they would find security, how they would know warmth and comfort in this hostile and uncertain world in which we live. And the question to ask each one of us this evening is, where do you most naturally run to for shelter? God calls you and I to set our hearts upon our road. Set your heart upon your road. Where is it going? What is your attitude? Is God first? Does he come a close second? What does it reveal about you? What does your road reveal about you when you can't see what's coming around the corner? When all of a sudden things are turned upside down? Do you cry out for God and put him first, regardless of what's going on in your life? Or do you rather pour all your energy into trying to grasp what you feel you're losing in this world? Whether it be something that, whether it be a security in a job, whether it be a friendship, whether it be the need for confirmation, the need for support, where is your ultimate support? Is it in God, or is it in what you understand and what you feel is right? Where are you running? Where do you naturally run to for shelter? Do you run to God? Is he your protection? Is he your strength, your security? So that's the first thing that we looked at. Setting your heart on this world leads, though, to disaster. How so? Well, we need to look at what disaster is. What presents the people of God who have pursued a life where, rather than going with God, they've sort of gone against God and tried to make ends work by themselves with their own resources, for they clearly disregarded their need for God by leaving the temple in ruins. So let's go to our second point. setting your what does disaster look like? Verses 10 and 11 say this: therefore the heavens above you have withheld the dew, and the earth has withheld its produce, and I have called for a drought on the land and on the hills, on the grain, the new wine, the oil, on what the ground brings forth, on man and beast, and all their labors. The key here is that opening word in verse 10, that word, therefore. All these things have come about with consequences. Because you have set your heart, God is saying, away from me, because your road isn't leading to the destination that points to me, but rather away from me, therefore all these things have come upon you, he's saying. If you were to study this in depth, you would appreciate that the commentators say that a lot of the language here is covenantal. Don't get lost by that word. What it simply is saying is that the people need to address that what they do has consequences. Consequences because of who God is. Because God is Lord, because God is the King, he is the Creator, and he wants us to put all of our life centered upon him. For he made us, and he has the right to do that. So whenever you ask the question, where is my road leading, you have to reason, where is God in this? Where is God in this day? Where is God in this moment? If I turn on a tap, I've got a leaking tap at home that I still haven't fixed, but if I turned on my tap, water will come out. And I might conclude that by turning the tap, I can produce water. But the truth is, if there's no pressure behind the tap, the pressure of the water, I can turn and I can spin, nothing will come out. Without God, if God were to withhold blessing from us, it would be like turning that tap and nothing coming out. The problem is we think that we have the control. The problem is we think that we, by our actions, determine the course of our life. But actually, it ultimately comes as to what God is bringing into our life or withholding from it. There are consequences. Verse 11 describes some of those consequences for the people of Israel at that time. They had neglected doing what they should have done. Their priorities were upside down. They were living for God. They were living for themselves. So these things came about. There was a program recently on the BBC called Surviving Progress. It talked of how do we, in a society that is successful, I mean, let's be honest, our populations have grown compared to centuries past. There are more people living on this planet than there ever have been. We are wealthier today than we ever have been. And the assumption is, or has been, that things will get better and better and better. But, lo and behold, we have faced a broken economy, and it's not the first time. It's like boom and bust. And the conclusion of this program was, we live in a world of limited resources. Therefore, these things are inevitable. We live in a world of limited resources. But the answer isn't in the limitations of this world. The answer to what we face and how we are to deal with it lie in God himself. He is the one who is in control. If God withholds his blessing, he can turn a garden into a desert, just as it's going on here. For these people, I don't know what they thought of the promised land, but I'm sure when they returned, it wasn't quite what they envisaged. It was a place that was turning more and more into a desert. For God was withholding the rain, and the consequences of that are clear, aren't they? We live in a place rich with fields. We know what goes on when there's no rain. The grass withers and dies. God wants you and I not to live and sow in a desert. He wants us to live in a garden. The question is, how do I live? How do I plant? How do I get that garden? Set your heart on your road and ask yourself this question: am I following a life that leads to God? Is my attitude one where God is first, everything else is second? Or is it that God comes second and other things come first? Ask yourself, when life is hard, what is my appetite? Is my appetite to try and keep what little I have on hold, to try and preserve what I have in this life? And if I were to lose it, it would be devastating. Or is it rather that my circumstances, my difficulties, whatever they may be, would drive me more and more to God? And where do I run? Where do I run most naturally? Do I run to God? Or do I try and find security in other things? In family? In my bank account? Where do I most naturally run? And answering where are we going, how does God lead us? Because the burden here is that if God is first, he doesn't want us to live in a desert. He wants us to live in a garden. How do we get to that garden? And this is the third point, where we set our heart. Where we set our heart answers that question. If it is upon God's glory, we have hope. Where do you set your heart? Is it upon God? Verse 8 says this: go up to the hills and bring wood and build the house that I may take pleasure in it and that I may be glorified, says the Lord. Some of you may feel like, I live in a desert. I've tried this, I've tried that. Nothing seems to be working out the way I'd hoped, the way I'd planned. I thirst for life. Verse 8 says then, set your heart on a road that leads to God. Set your heart on his glory. Live for his pleasure and not yours. If I live for my pleasure, what follows is breakdown. What follows is a life that ends in a desert, just like it did the way these people were going. God was withholding his blessing because of their rebellion toward him, because they weren't putting him first, and as a consequence, life was getting harder and more barren for them. But if you put God first and live for his pleasure, God will bring a garden. Now, we need to be careful here. I don't mean by this that by putting God first, all will go well with your life. In this world, others may see you who don't know the Lord, who don't know God, and think that, why are you facing so much trouble when I'm putting God first? Well, we looked at the book of Habakkuk that answers some of those questions. There is a mystery to how God works, and his chief purpose is that if you're a Christian, you'll be like Christ. And reading into how God works in our lives is a tricky business. But if we put him first, he has promised that we will receive everlasting life. You see, if I sow to my own self, to what pleases me, let's use, for example, money. If I live for money, I may well find I'm willing to give in a limited way for a time to those that are closest to me, to my closest concerns. But as time goes on, and as my heart lives more and more and is driven more and more to find security in money, I may find myself becoming less generous, pushing people away, being hostile to those that threaten my position. I may well find myself in the end gaining my dream, whatever that be, for the case of the Israelites here, the house. I may have the house, but I may well have lost anyone to share it with. I may have lost my family. I may have lost my friends. I'll be all alone. What I've sown is a life in a desert. But how are we then to go into the garden? How are we to find a garden? That's answered in verses 12 and 13. Let's read this. Then Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, the high priest, with all the remnant of the people, obeyed the voice of the Lord their God and the words of Haggai the prophet, as the Lord their God had sent him, and the people feared the Lord. Then Haggai, the messenger of the Lord, spoke to the people with the Lord's message. I am with you, declares the Lord. It takes power to transform a desert into a garden, doesn't it? It takes water, the transforming power of water. Well, in our hearts, God can work so that we don't live for destruction, ultimately. Though we may be living for ourselves, ultimately it ends in disaster. But if we live for Him, God has the power to change our hearts, that we may be beautiful in His eyes. You see, there was once a garden in a time in the Bible, in the book of Genesis, Adam and Eve, where they lived. God was with them. God walked with them. They had no need, for God met everything. There was no sorrow, no tears. But then they disobeyed. They rebelled against God. And what was the thing that happened? They lost the knowledge of these words, I am with you. I am with you. Those words we can understand at one level, but do we know it in our heart? Do we know it in our experience? I am with you. Set your heart on your road. Does it lead to that conclusion? God saying, I am with you. There's a promise in Isaiah 7:14, famous and well known, with the words Emmanuel, God with us. God would give a sign. Sign of his coming, the sign of being with his people. What was that sign? It was the owner of the garden coming into that desert. God to be with you. God to be with you involved tearing down the temple one more time. To come into our lives, you see, the temple needed to be destroyed. This temple was rebuilt that Haggai preached. The people responded incredibly. Not many prophets were that successful, but this one was, in the sense of successful in obedience and the response of the people. But that temple could never save anybody. That temple could never bring anybody to God without what it pointed to, the true temple. That temple is Jesus Christ. And Jesus Christ came to be with us. He came into this world, into this desert, into this place of chaos and disorder. And he said to the people of that day that he was among, the religious people, you see that temple, the one that Haggai was preaching about, the one that the people of that time built up, you see that temple? I will tear it down and raise it up in 3 days, he said. On the cross, you see, Jesus Christ needed to be torn down. He needed to be shut out. He needed to be in that place where he would be abandoned, not because of himself, for himself, but for you. He had to go that way. He had to go to that place where he would thirst and there would be no water. He had to go to that place where blessing was withheld from him. For who? For you and for me. In order to give us a garden, in order for our lives to be with God, to know those words of comfort, to know those words of security, to know those words of protection, I am with you, Christ had to go to the cross. And this is where it all points to. You and I are called to look up. Steve Jobs lived by looking across at his life and the ticking years counting down. But do you look up? Have you set your heart upon a road that leads to God, that puts him first? Can you know the experience in your life? I am with you. Because if you know that, it changes everything. You know that you are going to a place of beauty. You know that God is doing a work of beauty within you because of the words, I am with you, have a reality to them. You know God has met with you.